This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined in studio by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Producer Remus gets us on and off the air like the expert that he is. 2 hours of hockey talk for you on this Wednesday evening. Joining us in about 30 minutes' time to talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, and so maybe we can engage in some schadenfreude about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael Tracos of the National Post is going to talk about their stunning collapse over the past two and a half weeks. Later on this program, 7:30 tonight, from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock, he's their beat writer for the San Jose Sharks, is going to join us to preview tomorrow night's Jets-Sharks game, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Puck drop, I believe, tomorrow night, 9:30. So it's a late night. Settle and make sure you go to bed nice and early tonight to make sure you have enough energy to stay up for the late night game tomorrow night. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. I say good evening to my colleagues, Richard and Ezra. Gentlemen, as I said, good evening. How are you?
Yeah, good evening, boys. We have a little hockey to talk about, as usual, tonight. Mm-hmm. Jets game coming up tomorrow night. It's unbelievable to think about this, but playoffs start in about 2 weeks exactly, actually.
2 weeks tonight?
A little bit, yeah. So not that many Jets games, and even though the season's it's been a long season, it's kind of tough to believe that we're getting to that point. Maybe it's because it's minus 30 outside and it's spring, but you know, as usual, there's always a lot to talk about. By the way, I love the coaches' summit that we just heard. Hat tip to Lawless and Huss. They did a great job there.
Absolutely. In case you missed any of that, it will be available right after we're off air, 8 o'clock tonight, so you can just keep it tuned to TSN 1290, as you always do, naturally.
Good evening, Drew. You know, tomorrow's game, interesting to see exactly how the Jets come out. I mean, for all intents and purposes, they're out of it now, and how do they play for pride? Do they bring it? Do they kind of, you know, do they just lay down? And I think, you know, we talked about Paul Maurice and the interesting interview that Hassler and Lawless had with him before we hopped on. I think that will have some say in whether or not Paul Maurice is back here next year.
And we'll get to that. That'll be one of the topics we touch on when we talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs a little bit later on in the show. For now, I want to get started with, of course, the Winnipeg Jets. They were last in action on Monday, losing to the Dallas Stars in Dallas by a 2-1 margin. That followed Saturday night's disappointing loss to the Carolina Hurricanes. The odds of them making the playoffs were thin to begin with, but then to lose two games in a row, especially the Carolina game, because that was the last game really of the year, aside from Calgary, then the last game of the season that you're going to be favored in. That's, I think, to my mind, officially put you can recite the last rites for the Winnipeg Jets and their playoff chances for this season.
Yeah, I mean, they're done. So then the question again is how they react. I mean, we could try and spin it any other way, but we can't. And injuries weren't the issue. It was a lack of execution, a lack of talent overall, I think, is the biggest issue.
Yeah.
And regardless of whether Coach Noel is behind the bench or Coach Maurice is behind the bench, they need to add more talent to the bench. And that falls on the GM. And this is a big summer for him. I know he's got a 4-year deal after this. So, you know, in terms of security, it probably isn't a big summer for him. But it's a big summer for him in terms of what he's doing with this team.
Because, the fan expectations are building. They're no longer just happy to be back in the NHL. There certainly is a groundswell of muttering of when are they going to make a move that we consider to be a significant move to change the face of the franchise or to improve the franchise's lot in the NHL standings.
That's right.
And you heard Paul Maurice talk about it for a couple hours there, roughly a couple hours on H&L. And, you know, these guys have really stepped up their games, and the record since Paul Maurice took over, Pavlik's been better. We've talked about this a lot since Paul Maurice came in. They've been better defensively. All the stats are trending upward, but at the end of the day, guys, this is the third year since the Jets have been here from Atlanta, and they're falling short of making the playoffs. And really, when you're moving forward, not only, and I thought one of the greatest quotes from Paul Maurice in that interview that he did with H&L was that he said, you don't just want to make the playoffs, you want to make the playoffs the next year. And really, that is the goal for this team. Sure, does it mean a lot if you get knocked out in the first round? No, because you don't want to just be a team that gets there year after year. But they do have to get some playoff experience here before they can progress as a team and eventually become a Stanley Cup contender. They're 2 or 3 years away, at least, from being a team that's going to be able to win a playoff round here. So, yes, Richie's right. There are holes that need to be addressed. Players that were brought in over the summer haven't really filled those gaping holes in this roster. And you can start with goaltending, and you can look at some of the secondary scoring options that the Jets have. It can't just be Andrew Ladd, Blake Wheeler, and Brian Little scoring the goals every night. Other people are going to have to be brought in here to take some of that load off of those guys. So, absolutely. Where in previous years you were locking up the core guys, now you got to bring in some other guys to fill holes that are pretty evident on this team.
It's not even pressure, too. I mean, it is pressure. That's one thing. It's also ice time and amount of wear on the body that those guys have to incur throughout the course of the year. You want to lessen that.
Sure.
You want to lessen that significantly based on talent level, but you also want to lessen it significantly in terms of workload.
Mm-hmm.
When you don't have any guys on the depth line that you can rely on a night-in, night-out basis, and again, we've seen this with Coach Noel and Coach Maurice, which tells you, not that you needed them to tell you, but if you did need them to tell you, there's no fourth line. Or a fourth line that they trust.
Unless it's a 7-2 game against Dallas.
That's not a fourth line that you trust.
Exactly right. You're 100% correct about that. You know, entering tonight's play,
I'm not even sure they trust the third line. I guess the third line, when they were going, when everybody's healthy, it was a little different. But I think they'd want to change the makeup of the third line. Like, Jokinen's not your prototypical third line center. He's a scorer. He doesn't score enough. And do you want to change how that third line center plays? And will that be dependent on the coach that they hire or keep?
And that's something that, of course, we will talk about throughout the course of the rest of the season and throughout the course of the summer when the Winnipeg Jets season ends here on NHL Midweek. And, of course, we'll do it Saturdays on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. What I wanted to talk to you guys about tonight is right now it's, you know, we're in agreement that the race for the playoffs, the playoff chase for the Winnipeg Jets is over at this point in time. My question I have is, you know, how far can this team fall in the standings? You know, they're currently 23rd in the standings. They have 73 points in 73 games. Nashville, has more regulation wins than the Jets, so they're 22nd. Also 73 points in 73 games. Right behind the Jets, you have Ottawa, who have a game in hand and are a point back. Carolina, a game in hand, 2 points back. Both those teams, not Ottawa, but Carolina also has the tiebreaker against the Jets. Given the schedule that the Jets have for the remaining of the year, which is a very difficult schedule, we've talked about it ad nauseum. To me, it's hard to believe, but it is conceivable that the Winnipeg Jets may not win another game. Certainly, without
they'll win another game just because they're gonna. I mean, they're gonna win another game, Drew, but they're not gonna go 7-3. I mean, you're asking from a reverse perspective of whether or not they'll get a better draft pick.
That's right,
and there's a lottery, of course, to factor in there as well.
Well, but the lottery,
but yeah, I mean, this team likely is going to be tough to go 4-6, so mm-hmm. that'll help. If other teams go 500, yeah, you could get passed by a few teams and have a better chance at a lottery. The draft this year is not particularly deep. It's not particularly big in terms of actual size of the players. It's a weaker draft, and you know, obviously the higher the better in any year, but there's a group, and you know, there's not necessarily a consensus. I mean, you'll hear your Aaron Ekblad talk, Ezzy. You'll hear that talk, and you'll hear about a couple other guys, but all in all, there's nobody here that's tank-worthy, as they say.
Right, and to answer the question, Richie, of how far the Jets can fall, it's what do you think their record is going to be? Let's be honest here. Edmonton's not catching them. Buffalo and Florida are way out of it. Buffalo's finishing last in the NHL. So, I mean, depending on what they go, and looking at the schedule, I'd probably say the Jets are going to go somewhere around 500. They have a tough California road trip coming up here. So, again,
tell me the games they're going to win to get to 500. They got 10 games. They got 9 games left. Tell me the 4 wins or the 5 wins they're going to pull off here, guys.
Sorry, I meant 4 and 5. So, well, you want the 4 wins? Yeah, Drew. You're going to play Minnesota. It's going to be a 1-goal game either way. You're going to play Calgary. You ought to win the game, even though we know that they're rolling right now. You play Phoenix. I mean, let's be honest. It's more of a coin flip. So there's 3 games right there. There's a coin flip games, right?
Right, but Richie, this conversation's subjective. Again,
Pittsburgh, Boston might be resting their players for all we know.
The Jets have beat the Ducks. The Jets have
I'm just saying.
Okay, whether they got lucky or not, I'm just saying things can happen, right? So we could sit here all day, and you could say Jets will go 1-8, and I could say they're going to. Or sorry, how many games are left? 10?
No, 9.
Nine. So you could say 1-8. I could say 3-5. Drew could. So I mean, yeah, sure. They're probably not going to go 7-2, Drew. But they're probably not going to go 2-7 either.
I think they will go 2-7.
Well, that's your opinion.
Of course, it's my opinion.
So you can't see into the future. So
no,
but even if they go 2-7, they're not finishing second last in the league. It just won't happen.
No, I'm not saying that they can get down that far.
They can
far.
Only fall really 2 or 3 spots.
They could. I mean, can they get down? They're right now. They're 8th. So they would draft if, you know, if everything went to chalk based on the draft and everything else, they would draft eighth overall this coming NHL draft in Philadelphia.
There's four teams that basically mathematically can't catch them. I mentioned them: the Sabres, the Panthers, the Oilers, and even the Islanders are 8 points behind the Jets. The Islanders aren't making up 8 points.
Basically, you're asking, Drew, is if Carolina and Ottawa are going to pass them. That's what you're asking.
That's my question.
Because Calgary, the Islanders, Florida, Edmonton, and Buffalo, the top five is... Now, that's going to be pending lottery, but the top five is fairly settled with 10 games to go. Carolina was a pretty bad team. That's one of the contexts, too, that you need to understand. If you watch the Jets and you watch Carolina last week and you say, oh, this team's pretty far away. I mean, they got some top-end talent. We'll talk about Justin Falk later on in the show and his contract extension. But you look at their team and you say, well, you know, they're pretty far away. And sometimes you need to take the step back and say, hold on, how far away are the Jets? Yeah. I mean, they have 2 points ahead of Carolina. I realize they play in a tougher conference, but that's still only 2 points ahead of Carolina. Now, Ottawa's more of a team that you think, okay, last year, you know, they exceeded expectations. This year, they're playing below expectations. They're probably somewhere in the middle if you're looking for a realistic point of where they're at. But that team could be one that fades completely, Drew, or it could be one that, like, that's certainly, out of Carolina and Ottawa, Ottawa's certainly better than Carolina. And probably and better than the Jets on paper,
right?
But
in the sense that they made the playoffs last year, so you're
better,
right?
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, I mean, based on the way they've played the last couple years, Carolina didn't make the playoffs. But you look at Colorado last year, last place in the league. So they're a playoff team this year. I'm not saying that any one of these teams are going to do that. I'm just saying that if you get the right draft pick, you can improve. And there's no Nathan MacKinnon. Richie's right. You talk to Craig Button and anybody that we've talked about on the show about the 2014 draft, it's not as deep as the 2013 draft. So that's true. But typically, the teams that are the bottom six, seven, eight teams in the league are far away. And in the Jets' case, I'd put them at the top of that group. But they have some work to do here because the results, they haven't. If you're 9th, 10th, 11th every year, you don't want to be there for another 1 or 2 years. And that's even with the improvement that we've had. Mark Scheifele, that was a home run. Jacob Trouba, home run. These are good draft picks. Morrissey, I like. But you've still got to be improving in the regular season. Right. If you're not in the playoffs, you got to be close to the playoffs. And they were there for a little bit. But this last little slide, they've pulled back and they're not even in it right now.
You got to nail your picks, but you're picking the top 10 to 13 every year. You're going to nail most of them.
You'd hope so, certainly. You're right. Because a first round pick that's within the top 12 of the draft is more impactful. It was significantly more impactful. I mean, you know, Jim Slater was, I think he was the 26th overall pick or something
30th,
like that. 30th? Okay, he was the 30th overall pick. I think he's given what most teams would want out of the 30th overall pick. You know, 30th overall pick can certainly be a third line, fourth line guy, and you'd say, yeah, I'm okay with that for the most part. Not the same for a top 12
pick. And that goes back to the Thrashers franchise. With the exception of Burmistrov, every single first round pick of the Thrashers is playing for the Jets right now.
And the one thing about that is, quickly, everybody talks about Atlanta, you know, what they did wrong. And let me tell you, they did a lot wrong. I mean, Don Waddell made some just terrible trades.
I thought the Kovalchuk trade was great.
Yeah, just
as a Devils fan.
Some unconscionable trades as far as I'm concerned. But at the end of the day, you kept the head of scouting for the draft with the Jets. So you're blaming a lot of the picks. Oh, you know, we didn't do this or they didn't draft well. I realize that the Jets have infused some of their own guys in there. But at the end of the day, I believe Marcel Comeau is still in charge of the draft. So if you're going to take away credit from a team, you might as well give the credit to the guys who are there, who've drafted these guys since they moved to Winnipeg. Meaning they drafted Scheifele, they drafted Trouba, they drafted Morrissey. I mean, jury's still out on Morrissey. Less so on Trouba. So, and even less so on Scheifele, although we know Trouba is going to be the best of the bunch, as far as everybody's concerned. If you're going to give credit for those, and you can't blame them for everything and not give them credit, you can't suck and blow.
Yep.
Well, I don't think people are criticizing the selections that they made in Atlanta. I think they're criticizing the development of those selections.
I think it's both.
Right, and I think it's critical. And we've talked about this. The 5 years we've been doing the show, it's critical. You look at the Detroit Red Wings as a model, and you look at other franchises, it's critical to have players that are developing the AHL that you can rely on when you have injuries, because they're able to pull up these guys from the AHL, they're able to fill voids. And the good news is, in St. John's, the prospect pool has improved a lot from when the Thrashers got here. There's more to choose from than there was when the Thrashers when they first came over.
And that's true, but nobody knows. Yeah. Like, everybody comes on and tells you, "Oh, we're great." You know that we meaning the Jets. The organization is always going to think they have great depth and prospects, or at least acknowledge, if they have a bunch of guys in the system, they're going to say they have high hopes for them. I've watched Vancouver Canucks special. Every prospect they have, Stan Smith thinks is going to be great. Because they all think that. So the question is, that the point I want to make is that nobody actually knows. How many people who are here have ever seen any of those guys play in St. John's? Have any of their games been on TV? So then you're taking it for somebody else's perspective, who we respect, like Robin Short or somebody like that from the St. John's Telegram. Yeah. For all intents and purposes, it's complete toss-up. We don't know, is J.C. LePon going to be good? We don't know that. I don't know if Brendan Kitchen's going to be good. I don't know how that game will translate. It may very well happen, but we don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot up in the air here. And success, I don't know the correlation. I'd assume it's probably not that high. Success in the AHL, as it relates to your NHL team, I'm not sure how high the correlation is. Why? Because a lot of the teams that succeed in the AHL, at least in the past, were veteran-laden teams. You know, how many, like Jason Krogs and guys like that who played in Winnipeg who put up significant totals or whatever it may be, Nolan Baumgartner, guys like that, I mean, they help your AHL team win, and they're important to those teams. But they're not important to the overall development of the organization. And maybe they are in terms of mentoring, but it doesn't mean that it's going to translate into talent moving up through your system.
Yeah.
So there's lots of things at play here. And I think there's lots of assumptions being made that people really don't know about.
We will find out about that as the time goes on, of course. Let's head to break, and when we come back, we'll talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs. They continue to free fall, and what will that eventually mean for Maple Leafs head coach Randy Carlyle? You're listening to TSN 1290. This is NHL Midweek.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 6 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. Online, TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. For over 25 years, Rumors has been Winnipeg's home for the best in stand-up comedy. For a list of performers or showtimes, visit RumorsComedyClub.com. Tonight at Rumors and through April 5th, K. Trevor Wilson is in town. Very funny guy. Check him out, RumorsComedyClub.com. Gentlemen, the Toronto Maple Leafs have been sucking as of late. They've lost 6 games in a row, and they've managed to fall out of a playoff spot. I should add as an addendum that they've lost 6 games in a row in regulation, which in this day and age in the NHL is really quite an incredible feat.
Yeah.
Not a good feat for not a feat in the positive sense of the word for anybody that's a Leafs fan, but for everybody else who can't stand the Toronto Maple Leafs, they're celebrating the Leafs' downfall as of late. If the Leafs do not make the playoffs, if this tailspin continues, they're mm-hmm. currently out of a playoff spot. They don't have any games in hand. Other teams have games in hand on them.
Yep.
It's not looking good for the Toronto Maple Leafs right now. Does it cost Randy Carlyle his job?
It's possible, and we're having Michael Tracos on in about 5-7 minutes or so from now, and he wrote about it today in the National Post. They've gone, Richie, from 3rd place to 10th place in 2 weeks. And that's what happens when you lose 6 games in a row these days in the NHL, especially in that Eastern Conference. It's not as close in between the 3rd and 6th spots in the West as it is in the East, but this is bad. And not only have they gone, Richie, from not... They had a chance to host a playoff series this year. A couple weeks ago. Now, not only do they probably not have that chance, they might miss it entirely. And they've got I've talked about this many times. I talked about it last week on 3 Things I Learned This Week. The Leafs have lots of speed, lots of offensive talent. I'm a big fan of James Van Riemsdyk. He's having a career year. Phil Kessel, arguably an MVP candidate. But the problems of this team, when Jonathan Bernier's gone down, James Reimer has struggled big time, and it's been the defense. You've got a young defense there, and you've got a top-heavy defense. Dion Phaneuf hasn't had his best year, Richie, but it's top-heavy. You've got problems with Morgan Rielly, and you've got problems with Jake Gardner. They've had Mark Fraser, guys like this, Paul Ranger, even though he had a horrible accident. It's just not a good enough defense, and we've talked about it all year.
That's right.
And if the Leafs aren't able to get into the playoffs with the offensive talent that they have, because that's one of the best lines in hockey, and I'm a big Tyler Bozak fan as well.
What else have they have after that, though?
It's top heavy. It's absolute. But, I mean, it's a team like a Dallas that after
the charitable donation contract of David Clarkson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
buyout candidate.
Apparently. When he was offered a lot of money, and even though I love David Clarkson, good player, it's too much money.
The problem is when you're bidding with Edmonton, you know you're in trouble.
So this team, Richie, yes, absolutely. Randy Carlyle did a great job last year. But what have you done for me lately? And is it a possibility that, I'm not saying that I think he should or will be fired, or he might end up with a different team. But it's a possibility because, Richie, well, when you fall that hard, that quickly, somebody has to take the blame, right?
This is the problem. We're going to get some clips on Carlisle here.
And it can't be, by the way, Richie, sorry to cut you off again. It can't always be James Reimer. And I think it's ridiculous. I've said this before. James Reimer, sure, he hasn't had as good of a year last year. It's not.
James Reimer's not the problem. The problem is his team is not very good.
Let's hear from Randy Carlisle before we get into James Reimer. Randy Carlisle, I'm talking about how they're a Jekyll and Hyde team.
When we do play, and for stretches, we look like we're a team that can play with anybody, but then we're inept in some areas that seems that the puck doesn't bounce our way, or there's hits a post or whatever. All those, the good fortune we had at the beginning of the year now seems to be piling up against us.
You know, Carlisle, Jekyll and Hyde is probably a decent way to describe them, but were they ever as good as their record indicated? I mean, we know we don't want to get into
Don't bring up the advanced stats.
No, we don't want to get into the course.
Don't do it, Drew. I'm not. You'll kill me.
Well, it doesn't matter about the advanced stats or not. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to realize that the Leafs...
They're outshot every game.
They score off the rush, and they can't sustain pressure. I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to know that's the way it is, and that they don't defend very well. You watch their games, you can realize that. The stats will tell you that as well. There's numerous things that will provide insight into the way the team is going. That's all easy. It's easy to point out what's wrong. It's hard to fix it.
Yep.
That's the problem. It's all easy finding games. Oh, they can't do this. Well, that's great. How do you fix it? And they don't know right now. That's the problem. And how you fix it, one way... is to add a defenseman. They didn't do that of impact, the hands tied, partially by themselves because of the contracts they've given out. So that's an issue. Now, you have Randy Carlisle coaching a team of speed and finesse. And Randy Carlisle coached a team in Anaheim that was basically the complete opposite. He relied on Paulson, Moen, and Niedermeyer to check the other team's best line. Okay, that's why Boland injury was so big, because the Leafs didn't have that checking center all year. They brought in Peter Holland, who is
more of an offensive guy.
It doesn't matter. He's not a top three center in the National Hockey League for the role they want him to play, if at all. Okay? You had Solani. I'm trying to remember the lines that they had. I know they had Getzlaff, Perry, and Panner, I think. That was like a third or fourth line in that.
I think Rob Niedermeyer.
Well, that was the third line. Yep. And then you had McDonald, Solani. Like, he had, for the most part, and Solani, for his finesse, is a big guy who will go in the corners. Pronger, Niedermeyer. He had guys who were all willing to engage in defense. Obviously, he had more talent, but he had a bigger team. So you're giving him a finesse team, a team that clearly won't buy into the defensive game, and he basically is at the point where he's like, all right, just play what style you're going to play, because I can't coach you to play the way I want you to play. And it goes both ways, because too many coaches try to coach a style without their players, and obviously he's tried to do that. Then the question is he the right coach for the job? Now, I personally believe, and I could be way out to lunch on this, I believe it's very possible he loses his job after the season. I believe it's possible Paul Maurice doesn't return, and I believe it's possible he's coaching here in September. I have nothing to substantiate that, just a hunch. It's very possible that's not the case, probably more possible, but I think it is possible that is the case, considering the relationships he has here in Winnipeg. But I think Carlisle is being blamed unfairly, and I think he's unfairly blaming some of his players too, for example, like James Reimer. But the way the roster is constructed, I like the roster going in to be a playoff team, and it hasn't meshed that well, but the defense is the biggest issue. Is Dion Phaneuf willing to play defense for the amount of money he makes on a consistent basis? Did you watch him the other night against St. Louis? And even their defensive coverage, and that's a coaching issue or buy-in issue. You know, Dave Bolin's covering for Phaneuf on one of the plays, and he's covering as a defenseman and just jumps into the middle of the ice and leaves a breakaway for David Backes. Like, they're not communicating. And I know they haven't had a healthy roster until, you know, I think last game.
Yeah.
But every team has injuries. So use injuries as an excuse. Forget about it. This team is not the type of team that Carlisle coaches. So you might want to add a different coach in there. But again, as you see here in most other places, Buffalo, other places, what happens when you change coaches? More often than not. 2 months go by, a month goes by, and what's the problem?
The players.
The coach looking down the bench, and he's got the same fourth line as the same power play unit as the last coach did, and he doesn't know what to do with them either.
That was going to be my follow-up. If there's a different coach in Toronto, does he get any much different results than Carlisle's got out of this?
No, I don't think so. Maybe a little bit more. But remember, if he cuts down on goals against, he very likely will cut down on goals for.
Because it's all together.
Toronto, always is.
In the first period of last night's game, I don't know if you guys caught that. I watched a little bit of it. The Blues got ahead a 3-goal lead, and Leafs made it close a little bit at the end, but it wasn't very close. Backes had the hat trick. They were outshot 23-7 in the first period. How many games are you going to win in the NHL when you're outshot 23-7? They've been outshot every year, and Richie's right. This team has those issues that were never addressed. It's not a type of team that Randy Carlyle wants to coach, or the style of play that he likes. He's not going to say that. But at the end of the day, I don't think it's one of the three or four best teams in the East. I think they were overachieving, absolutely. But I think they're definitely a team that should be in the playoffs. They're up there with Columbus and Detroit. And you're right, every team has injury problems and all that. You can't use that as an excuse. But this team right now, and Dion Phaneuf was on a radio station today talking about if the players have given up. And to me, this is a group that you look at this group, and I've said this many times on this show, and I'm not going to be just the guy that piles on the Leafs from Winnipeg.
Yeah.
But this is a team that when things go bad, they seem to go really bad. We've seen the Leafs just absolutely blasted by teams this year, 8-1, 7-1. We've seen that many times. Good teams never lose like that.
Let me ask you about their defense. Let's go over their defense quickly. I know Michael Tracos of the National Post is coming up to talk about this. Phaneuf, what's his biggest strength?
Offense.
Offense. What's Franzen's biggest strength?
Offense.
What's Riley's biggest strength?
Young still offense. Can't develop, but it's offense.
Offense. What's Gardner's biggest strength?
Offense.
You can't win in the National Hockey League unless you got Duncan Keith out there with offense defense. You can't do it. You can't have four guys who think offense first. You just can't. And that's the problem you're going to have at the end of the day, is you can't have that many guys who... And there's a reason they're able to be great in transition. You know, Franzen's not a great skater. Phaneuf is solid, but nothing special. And Gardner and Riley can really fly, and Gardner's a good skater. But the problem is that, you know, defensively, you have Riley and a young guy. Phaneuf, who doesn't seem to care a ton about defense, if you watch him a lot. Franzen just can't get around the ice well enough. He just can't. Gardner, who gets pushed off the boards in a second, and back to Riley, who's 19 years old, learning how to play defense in the National Hockey League. Not all these guys are Jacob Trouba, and Riley is impressive. So the point is, I mean, he's looking down at his bench and saying, you're giving me, he made Mark Fraser look good last year. Okay? Then you got Tim Gleason, who they pull off the, you know, from Carolina for Lyles. Tim Gleason is a tough, rugged, stay-at-home shot blocker. Can't get around the ice much either. So, you don't have any guy you can look to and say, hey, That's the guys I'm going to rely on for 25. You don't have Ryan Suter. You don't have Gary Suter, for God's sake.
More on this with Michael Tracos after these messages.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
There's a lot of tenseness in our players. You can tell by the start of the game. The first three puck recoveries, we just slapped the puck away. We didn't pick up the puck and skate with it at all. And that's showing signs of being nervous, tense, confidence, you know, not wanting to make a mistake, which led to more offensive zone time. And, you know, for the way Bernie played in the first period, we get out of that 1-1, we would have been very, very fortunate.
Randy Carlyle talking about the Leafs' performance from last night against the St. Louis Blues, their sixth straight defeat in the midst of their tailspin. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Let's head to the Hockey Show Hotline.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
Transferring a call.
Pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from the National Post. He covers the Toronto Maple Leafs, Michael Tracos. Michael, good evening. Thanks very much for doing this.
Anytime, guys.
Michael, we just played the clip of Randy Carlyle last night talking about the tension in the room, tension in the group. You know, six straight losses now. Is this the, you know, are they still in the midst of the tailspin, or do you see that this tailspin might be coming to an end?
Well, they got Philadelphia on Friday, and Philadelphia's been playing great right now. I wouldn't want to face them in the playoffs in the first round, so we could be in for, if you're a Leaf fan or if you're the Leafs, I think you could be in for maybe one more loss. And granted, the schedule lightens up a bit, but you still got Boston soon after that. So it's not like it gets any easier. And especially with the way the Leafs are playing, it doesn't matter if it's Florida, Calgary, whoever. Winnipeg's on their sked later on, so it doesn't really matter who they're going to play. If they can't get their game right and play solid defensive hockey, then they could be playing an AHL team. And really, they lost to one in Detroit a week ago. So really the opponent is circumstance right now.
Michael, they have to go 6-2, you think, to make it?
Yeah, I don't know. it's so tough because the East has been so bad. You guys know how it is, right? I think if Winnipeg was in the East right now, facing Eastern opponents regularly, I think they'd probably be a playoff team. That's how bad the East is right now. So, yeah, 6-2 probably is safe. I think the big game is going to be Detroit on Saturday. That's a 4-point game, and that's really the only opponent they have that's in that cluster, that really four-way tie that they're in right now, even though they're last because of regulation wins and games in hand. But they have to win the important ones. And, yeah, I guess you win 6-2. I guess you take care of your business, then you don't really have to do as much scoreboard watching, really.
I guess those outdoor game spectacles don't look, you know, look like they're a little bit overblown, or not overblown, actually. The fact they're playing outside when it could have very well determined who makes the playoffs, it makes it a little more, you know, controversial even.
Yeah, yeah, I guess. Yeah, they lost, what, in the shootout in that one? Or they won in the shootout in that one.
Yeah.
It seems so long ago. But yeah, those outdoor games, I don't know how you guys feel about them. But
I hate them.
Yeah, it's too early.
Yeah, I can't say. I mean, one game is fine. It's six games.
Yeah. That's how I think most fans now are. It's to the point where it's a bit overkill, and yeah, keep it for maybe the New Year's Day game and maybe one other game.
Look at their defense, Michael, and we were talking about it before you came on. I mean, the strength of a lot of these guys is puck moving and offense as opposed to defense, at least in my opinion. And when they're defensemen, they're supposed to, you know, be able to at least play defense. This group as a whole, like, how do you rank? Forget the forwards for a second, and even the goaltending. How do you rank the defense on a scale of 1 to 10?
Oh, it's right at the bottom, either one or two. And it's got potential to be good just because they've got a couple young pieces there in Morgan Riley and Jake Gardner. But Dion Phaneuf has been, he's been okay. I think he's still miscast as the number one defenseman. Mm-hmm. He was terrible the other night against St. Louis. But the guy for me that's been just really regressed this year is Cody Franzen. And there's talk that he's battling a hip problem, and I would believe it because he's been beat so many times just off the rush and making a lot of bad reads defensively. And, yeah, that defense is just atrocious. And you mentioned they have a lot of puck-moving guys, but really they haven't been moving the puck very cleanly. Their passes have been awful, and they seem to be turning over the puck a lot. And where your strength is, if you get the puck, you should be able to get it out of your zone cleanly and move up the ice. Well, that's the Leafs' number one problem right now, and that's not even taken into account that the fact that they do have a lot of guys who play soft defensively. Tim Gleason's really the only guy who plays with a level of bite back there, and he's the least mobile puck-moving defenseman that they have. So it's kind of a real odd mix. I think there's some solid pieces back there if you put them in the right situation, put them on a team where they're getting less ice time and less responsibility. But right now they're leaning too heavily on guys like Jake Gardner and even Morgan Riley, and while you're seeing flashes of what they can be, I think right now in their development, it's a little too much for them.
Michael, we were talking about this right before you came on, and this is going to be a question that I imagine is going to be asked more and more, especially if the Leafs don't end up making the playoffs. But if the Leafs do ultimately miss out on making the playoffs, do you think that Randy Carlyle is in jeopardy of being fired, or do they bring him back next year and hope that things turn around?
I think Randy's got a fall on the sword. He's not a known-as hire. And when I look at back at the kind of coaches, I was just doing this the other day just for fun, just the kind of coaches that Nonis has had, Randy Carlyle doesn't seem like the kind of guy you would hire himself. Ron Wilson seemed like it might have been a better fit with Nonis as the GM. And
he's available.
Yeah.
Bring him back.
Where is he? We haven't heard from him, have we? But, yeah, not that Randy. I'm not in the camp that is thinking Randy Carlyle is the worst coach that the Toronto Maple Leafs have ever seen. And you go on Twitter and it seems like that's the consensus out there. But I think just because of how bad of a tailspin this is and the problems, even when they're winning, they were front and center for everyone to see. I think only Buffalo at one point was allowing more shots and had a worse shot differential than the Leafs. And when you're battling Buffalo out there for possession time, you know you're doing something wrong. So at least we're getting by on outstanding goaltending and a top line and a power play that was just outstanding. And that's not really coaching. That's Paul Maurice used to always say, show me a good goaltender and I'll show you a good coach. So it's one of those things where when the goaltending was going south, or not even going south, but when it was stopped making up for the mistakes that the defensive mistakes that they were making, that's when you're really seeing how bad the system is being executed out there, and that's probably a coaching thing.
Michael, I agree with you 100%, and I think Randy Carlyle is a great, great coach, and I think it's hilarious that one year he's one of the best coaches of all time, and then the next year, you know, people are calling for him to be fired. I think it's pretty ridiculous, and I think we'd all agree about that. On that topic, you mentioned goaltending. James Reimer, is the all of the talk and all the criticism directed to James Reimer, is this just Leafs fans, sorry, or is this a legitimate concern that maybe they should bring in another goalie to back up Bernier?
You know what, I think James Reimer can be a starting goaltender in this league. What I don't think that he's shown this year is that he can be a backup goaltender. And you know what, I think we almost take for granted how difficult it is to be a backup goalie when you're playing maybe once a month or twice a month, and you go maybe 2 weeks without playing, and you're expected to go in there and be sharp. That takes a level of skill. Guys that do it well, like a Marty Baron, and there are like even a Peter Budaj right now doing it for Montreal, that's impressive. Mm-hmm. But I think James Reimer is kind of struggling with that right now, is going from, okay, I'm playing every game or two out of three games, and to go into that backup role and be called upon. And when you're that rusty, I think it really plays with you mentally. So I kind of feel bad for Reimer just because he has been taking a lot of heat. And I think we do forget, or Leaf fans forget, that a year ago he was the reason why this team made the playoffs. Last year they were just as bad as a possession team, but Reimer was standing on his head, set a record for save percentage. So I don't think he's necessarily regressed to the point where he's no longer a capable number one. I think it's just he's struggled right now in the role that he's been given, with Bernier getting to share the workload and a coach that doesn't seem to have any confidence in you. So hopefully he can land on his feet, and hopefully the fans will kind of cut him some slack. I don't see the second coming of a Vesa Toskala or Andy Raycroft by no means.
So they're not going to trade him for Tuukka Rask again?
Yeah, that's right. And another guy, geez. Yeah. There's been a lot of bad goaltending decisions on this franchise.
That there have been. We're joined on the league on NHL Midweek by Michael Tracos of the National Post, talking about the Toronto Maple Leafs. Michael, you look back, you know, we'll go back, you know, the games prior to the 6-game losing streak. The Leafs have been playing good hockey. They won, you know, three out of four, including two out of three through the especially difficult West Coast trip. You know, is the only difference between the team that lost six in a row and the team that had won, you know, in Los Angeles and had won in Anaheim, is the only difference between those two teams Jonathan Bernier?
Basically, like, you look at the offense, and granted, James Van Riemsdyk has been going through a bit of a dry spell here, but Phil Kessel and him are still getting equal amount of chances and scoring opportunities. It's just, whereas Jonathan Bernier was literally standing on his head in those games, and to be honest, he left in the first period against Los Angeles, and Reimer came in and stopped the next 31 shots. And
right.
He stopped 31 shots over two periods. Like, that's a full game's worth. A lot of teams don't even give that up in, like, a full game. So, goaltending really has been the saving grace of this franchise. Goaltending and really Phil Kessel's line. And if neither one of them, it's a bad recipe, because if one of them goes south or one of them is not performing at 100% of their level, then this team looks garbage. They look like they have no business being in a game, and they're capable of losing big blow at games. Like, you look at the schedule, and they've lost some pretty big games, like 6-1 to Carolina, 7-1 to Dallas, 7-1 to New York Rangers, like 6-3 to St. Louis, and then last night's game could have easily been like a 9-2, 9-3 game. Like, this is a team where if things are going right, they squeak by with a one-goal victory or shootout win, and if things are going wrong, it's 6-0 to Los Angeles, to Columbus. It's big blow, and so they really walk a fine line, and it's not like they ever – well, I guess now they're losing kind of squeakers, but by no means do they feel like squeakers. They feel like they're just getting outplayed in every facet of the game.
Michael, when the Leafs file their year-end tax return, do they get a charitable donation for the David Clarkson contract?
Oh, man. Yeah, that one's not looking good. And the whole talk, really, in the last month or so was, okay, well, in the playoffs, this guy's going to be all right, because really that's why they got him for the playoffs.
Got to get there.
Now it's like, yeah, you got to get there. Like, sorry, you can't just save it all for the playoffs. And then someone brought up the stats, and like, actually, David Clarkson's stats in the playoffs aren't that impressive, guys. So Yeah, he's been... I don't want to blame Randy on this because I think there's just been so many factors contributing to David Clarkson, but I get the feeling now that he doesn't know what role he's playing. The coach doesn't know what role to put him in. Like, he's not playing on the first or second unit power play. He's basically on a third line, checking line most nights. And I get the feeling where he was playing in a structured offense and was a go-to guy a lot of times on the power play in New Jersey. Now he's almost the forgotten man on offense. So, and really, if you're the Leafs, it's not like you're going to give him every opportunity to turn around his game when guys like Mason Raymond and Nikolai Kuhlman and others have really outplayed him. So it's really no fault to his own, really, with the injuries and suspensions and just how he's never really gotten his game on track. But, you know, for the sake of him, because he is a nice guy off the ice, and he's been really good to us. And you hope, just based on his track record, that he'll be able to turn it around, just because you hate to see a guy just kind of get run out of town. Seems like there's every year there's a guy, like whether it's Mike Commissaire, Tim Connolly, mm-hmm. like Jeff Singer, there's a long list of bad contracts in the city, and you just hope to see one of them actually work out, just because he, you know, you see the guy's face every day, and it's just, it's disappointment.
Dave Boland, Michael, he's back now. Of course, it's only been a little bit here, and a few, last game maybe made a pretty bad read, I thought, in covering for Phaneuf and just pinched in the neutral zone. Looked like he's right. A little bit out of place. I mean, they obviously need him to be important over this last stretch of games here. How good do they need him to be if they're going to turn this around?
Well, they got David Boland and David Clarkson and Jonathan Bernier basically as a direct result of losing Game 7 to Boston.
Right.
The Leafs felt they needed that kind of physicality or that bite that was lacking against the Bruins, and the kind of guys that wouldn't fold when the pressure was getting too intense. So they got a guy days removed from scoring the clinching goal in the Stanley Cup final, and really the injury has really hurt him, because before that injury, he was basically playing second line minutes and was I think he was easily their best all around centerman. So yeah, they definitely need David Boland to kind of get close to what he was before the injury. This is exactly the time of season when it seems like, you hear the comments from Joffrey Lupo and it says, yeah, we're definitely scared of losing a playoff spot, and you hear Randy Carlisle calling the team tense and saying that they're playing scared and mm-hmm. not moving their feet. Well, this is when you need a guy like David Boland to say, no, I've been in here before. I've won two cups. This is not a scary situation. This is an easy situation. All you have to do is just basically work hard and go into corners and blah, blah, blah. So, but basically he's got to show them. He can't just tell them. So, you need Dave Boland to be that guy, and to kind of lead them right now, because this is a team where it seems like they're operating without a rudder.
Michael, wanted to just ask you one quick question here. Your colleague Sean Fitzgerald wrote the article today about Eric Knodel. I guess Don Cherry wasn't very happy that they went out and they signed a guy out of the U.S. College, University of New Hampshire. In the short amount of time that you've been able to learn about Eric Knodel, what do you know about him, and is there a chance that he can play as a defenseman? Can he play for the team next year?
Here's where I'm confused. Eric Knodel was a draft pick. Don Cherry phrased it almost like he was another Tyler Bozak signing or Spencer Abbott or one of those college free agents that Brian Burke was so high on. And I read the tweet and I was like, hold on a sec. I remember Eric Knodel. He was drafted in 2009. So he's a fifth-round pick of the Leafs. So the idea that he was signed out of college, well, when you draft a guy, you've got X amount of years to sign to an entry-level contract, whether he's playing in major, junior, in Europe, in NCAA, wherever it might be, you're going to sign that guy in a certain amount of time. So this is just standard practice by a hockey team, signing one of their draft picks. Whether he's going to be ready for the Leafs, I doubt it. He's played, 3 years at New Hampshire. He has zero pro experience, so I imagine he'll probably spend 1 to 3 years probably playing in the minors, whether it's with the Marlies or the ECHL affiliate, and then we'll go from there. But this is just standard practice. This is another Don Cherry just kind of hearing NCAA and kind of going off, rather than typing in Eric Knodel's name and just going, oh, yeah, the Leafs draft.
Yeah.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. We've talked a lot about Randy Carlisle and the heat that he's under, given the Leafs' struggles. You know, you look at that Leafs roster, and it's, you know, to some degree, obviously not the entire thing, but to some degree, it's put together by Dave Nonis. Is there any heat on Dave Nonis?
No, zero. He got the whole stamp of approval from Tim Leiweke last summer, signed to a pretty good extension. So they've known us. First, you're going to have to go through the coach. Then you're going to probably talk about Dave Nonis, but right now he has zero heat on him.
Well, it's a good position to be in, I guess. Michael Latrakos covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. Michael, thank you as always.
All right, guys. Thanks very much.
We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Let's head to break. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Michael Trakos of the National Post. In case you missed any of that interview, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. This segment is brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, conveniently located at the corner of Cordon and Lanark in the Cordon Village Mall. Bernstein's is a family-owned and operated traditional-style deli. Take it home or eat it in their full-service restaurant. Bernstein's Deli has been your deli destination for nearly 30 years. Check out their website at bernsteinsdeli.com or visit them on Facebook. And remember, get your Passover orders in now. Saturday, of course, we'll be debuting our new Bernstein's Deli commercial. Mm-hmm. So we're looking forward to that. You can listen to that on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Saturday. Note the start time.
Yes.
Note the start time of Saturday's show, 3 p.m. here on TSN 1290. Ezzy, you can go out Friday night and you can go get as drunk as you want.
Whoa. I don't get inebriated. I don't think
it's a permanent state.
I don't think any of us, by the way, have been able to sleep in that late on a Saturday in maybe 3 years.
Yeah.
So I'm loving the late games. I know that, you know, it's a little bit more difficult to get up for work, but the next four games, I believe, are all 9 o'clock or 9:30 starts. So, you know, if you're a night owl, you're loving this. If you're the type of person that likes to go to bed at 10:30 or 11, Drew, you go to bed at 7:30 at the seniors' home. Yeah. So, you know, I love it.
Quickly want to talk about Justin Falk, the Carolina Hurricanes. He is obviously he just signed a new contract with the Hurricanes earlier this week. It's a 6-year, $29 million contract extension, an average annual value of $4.833 million. Falk was an Olympian on the U.S. Olympic team. Didn't play a lot in Sochi, but nope. He was sort of their extra defenseman for most games. Your thoughts? Decent price for Justin Falk? $4.8 million per year?
You know, I haven't seen Justin Falk play too much. And I've seen has actually been, you know, up and down play. Certainly a skill level there and a puck moving ability and some smarts, but like, at times can get beat. There are periods of inconsistency like there are for many young defensemen. The issue I have, you know, for the core of this team, Skinner, both Stahls, Salmon, and Falk sign long term. You got a nice core for Ronnie Francis when he takes over there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? You got to fix the depth, though. But it's nice that it's easier to...
Sounds familiar.
Yeah. But they have higher skill level than the Jets do. So it's easier, and they have goaltending. And you could argue they just don't. So it's easier to build around skill than it is to build around, you know, a little bit less of a level of skill. It's easier to add depth players is what I'm trying to say, as opposed to adding the skill players. Now, having said all of that, on a macro level, the second contract is the GMs in the National Hockey League don't make anybody earn it anymore. That doesn't mean he hasn't had an impressive early start to his career. He's in the third year of his entry-level deal. He's been good, for the most part. Made the U.S. Olympic team. Fine, dandy. Would it have killed the Carolina Hurricanes to put him on a 2-3-year deal here and bridge him? Nobody does it.
The only general manager who does it. One general manager did it. Mark Bergevin in Montreal.
Right, and he's going to have to pay. But we don't know for sure if Subban would have performed at this level had he not been up for contract.
Sure. Sather's done it, too.
Sather's done it too. Yeah, Sather wins negotiations.
That's right.
Yeah. But the point is, like, for $4.8 million, these contracts now are at a point where $4.83 million, won't hurt you. It's like, but I just don't understand why nobody utilizes a second contract anymore. The system isn't placed to be able to utilize that. His first year after the 3-year deal, he has no arbitration rights. I know you want to keep a good relationship with the guy. It doesn't mean just giving him what he wants. So I just think. Everybody else does it, so I'm not blaming Jimmy Rutherford. But the point is, why don't any of these GMs use leverage?
I know we're quickly up against the end of the hour here, Drew, but just quickly on Justin Falk. I really like Justin Falk's game. He didn't have a good game against the Winnipeg Jets. He was exposed a lot. I think this contract is more of a function of the Carolina Hurricanes not having a lot of defenseman options. And again, Richie, when you look at this contract and compare just the numbers to Ryan McDonagh, it's almost identical.
Well, it's scary. I mean,
and Ryan McDonagh is... no offense to Justin Falk, but Ryan McDonough is one of the best defensive defensemen in the league. And when you look at that, Glenn Sather got a great deal for Ryan McDonough there. Richie's talked about this a lot. Justin Falk, still a great puck mover, good offensive defenseman, not the most physical guy, and he has a lot of room to grow as an overall defenseman. As Richie said, now, if you're going to be anointed or perform as the number one defenseman in the NHL, you got to be able to play on both ways.
He's better than Bogosian, but Bogosian had a bridge deal before he got his 5+.
Right. I should point out, before we quickly go to break, his actual salary next year?
It doesn't matter, though. Because it's cap hit, and his cap hit goes up to a point where they pay him $6 million in the last year of the deal, but he's not eligible for arbitration, so it's irrelevant what his contract is at the end of the deal. In terms of dollars paid out, it's relevant for the teams.
Right.
But cap-wise, which is all people really care about anymore, it's not that relevant.
That's right. Let's head to break. When we come back, we are going to start our new segment, UFA of the Week. You're listening to NHL Midweek. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
They've got 5:39 to go in the third as the puck is in the near corner. Stastny with it. Dumps it for Tanguay. It went through him. Play by Landeskog. Try to pitchfork it down low. Does. Stastny has it in the slot. Shot. Score! The great feed from Landeskog to Stastny. All by himself on the near side doorstep. He jams it home, and the Avs have taken a 3-2 lead for Stastny, his second of the season, and it could not have come at a better time.
Paul Stastny starts our new segment, Unrestricted Free Agent, UFA of the Week. New segment here on the show. It'll also be on Saturday's show as well, where we're going to break down the pending unrestricted free agents in the NHL, because before you know it, July 1st will be upon us, and we'll be looking at up and down the rosters of the NHL teams and saying, who can the Winnipeg Jets get that could fit well on their roster? So we start tonight, Richard Pollock, with Paul Stastny, 28 years old, turning 29 in December. His contract that is currently expiring was a 5-year, $33 million contract. It did have an annual average value, a salary cap hit of $6.6 million. This year, Paul Stastny has played 61 games. He's got 50 points, 20 goals, 30 assists. His career high came in 2009-2010 when he had 81 games played, 79 points, with 20 goals and 59 assists, just about a point per game player. What is it about Paul Stastny that is the best attribute of his game?
Oh, it's his passing. It's his vision on the ice. I mean, he's a setup guy. As you can see, Drew's never scored more than 28 goals in a year, and that's good for a setup guy. He's scored over 20 goals 5 times, so he can certainly score as well, but he sees the ice really well, Drew, and that's his biggest strength. So he's going to cash in on the open market because there's a need for skilled setup guys. There always is. There always will be. I don't think Colorado's going to be the team to pay him, though. When you have Duchesne, O'Reilly, McKinnon, who can all play the middle, that's hefty money you're going to be paying Paul Stastny. That'll eat into the other money you're going to be dispersing along your roster, especially when you have a significant need on defense.
Ezzy?
Yeah, and, you know, Richie touched on it. Paul Stastny has great vision on the ice, great playmaker. He might never get back to those numbers that he had that year, but this year he's at about 0.8 per game, 0.8 points per game. Mm-hmm. Last year he had a rough year, and let's be honest, with the exception of Ryan O'Reilly, who didn't have a bad year on the Colorado Avalanche last year. So this year he's playing more to that level, as you mentioned, Drew. Career Richie in the league, he's been around 0.8, 0.9 points per game for players that have been in the league that long. I mean, you're talking he's around top 50 as far as the point per game average. You think there's a lot of players that average that many points per game, but there just isn't. So he is an offensive player that will be in demand, Richie. We expected Joe Sakic to move him, and now it's a situation that's funny. Adrian Dater wrote about this in the Denver Post. Essentially, Paul Stastny is a rental player when he's under contract with the Colorado Avalanche, and has been, in the sense that they know it's unlikely he's going to sign, Richie, and that's because you got Nathan McKinnon in the middle. You've got Ryan O'Reilly playing the wing, but he's a natural center. He can play both. You got Matt Duchesne there, who's been signed. So where does Paul Stastny fit in? And that's the whole reason why we picked Paul Stastny. He's the number one UFA in the market. And I think when you look at his offensive abilities as the center, a team like the Winnipeg Jets couldn't use a guy like that. Well, I'm not saying they're going to go after him. Oh. I'm just saying that he's going to be highly sought after on the free agency market because of how dynamic of an offensive player he is, and how he can create for other players.
Playmaking center is exactly what the Jets need.
Yep.
Doesn't mean they need to go pay for him depending on what he costs. I mean, but I think he certainly fits a need. Whether it's a fit here in terms of price is a different story. As a quick aside, and we didn't structure it this way, but you look at Paul Stastny, he's the exact reason why the second contract is misused in the National Hockey League. You look at his entry-level deal. After his entry-level deal, where we know he played very well, 78 points first year, 71 points the second year, and 36 points in 45 games in the third year. They sign him to a five-year deal at $6.6 million a year. They use no leverage at all, and they sign him to a $6.6 million deal per year. His point totals after that, 79, 57, 53, 24, and now he's got 50. So you jump the gun, you don't use the leverage, and sometimes you pay for it. So we don't know what's going to happen with Falk, but that could happen. Now back to Stastny. He's not the best skater. He's very smart, though. And he has a little bit of off-ice issues, but I think he's over those now. And I think he's going to be able to add... He helps a team because he makes other players better. And that's why there's going to be a market for him. But I think he's going to get overpaid, like almost everybody does in the UFA market. As he made a point, you know, what level is he at point-wise? And I think that's a very good one because, you know, he might be that 60-point guy now. But if he's a 60-point guy who gives you 20 goals and 40 assists, and you don't have that guy in the system because not many teams do, he's going to fit. I'm interested to see what term he gets because you look at his age and you say, okay, Paul Stastny is 28 years old, okay, turning 29 at the end of December. Mm-hmm. So you're going to get him for 28 to 32 years. I mean, you know, for 4 years there, he's certainly not going to be washed up at that point. And if foot speed has never been his strength, he should be able to succeed fairly well during that time period. So I see him probably getting a five-year deal.
And does he match the $6.6 million he's currently getting?
I think you're looking at 5 years, five to five and a half. And there's risk there.
But like you said, Richie, you look at last year's UFA market, and it wasn't as strong as it was 2 years ago. So we're talking the Parise-Suter year.
Well, that's all these second contracts. Right. They're going to get rid of the UFAs.
Right. So I think you're right. But who knows if, because a team needs that offense, secondary offense, they might give him $7 million a year, considering he's pretty much almost making $7 million a year now. Look at Columbus, who wanted Nathan Horton, and they said, we're going to give you the money. They gave him that contract. Yeah. So... You know, there are some good UFAs out there this year. You're going to see Callahan, obviously, who's a UFA. Mm-hmm. But when you're talking about Stastny, even the Vanek, you're talking Stastny. He's not a 90-point guy. He's not an 80-point guy. But he's going to be on a good team. He can, or even a team that needs another center there. Mm-hmm. He's a very good player. So you're going to see a team, as Richie said, minimum 5 years. You might see a team throw 6 or 7 years for a guy like that. They just... Established NHL guys at his age, just there aren't a lot of them on the free agency market.
I bet Anaheim calls. They could use somebody behind Getzlaff. I bet you Chicago calls to see what it is, although they probably don't spend the money. I bet you Florida calls to have a guy who's in his late 20s mentor guys like Barkov and Bjugstad. You push Barkov and Bjugstad down a slot, and you got money to spend with new ownership. That's a possibility. A lot of teams are going to call, and this is why you want your client, if you're an agent, to go to UFA because you create a bidding war. And hey, it makes sense that way. The Jets will call, I'm sure. I mean, there's a lot of teams. I'm sure Colorado will talk to him. I'm just thinking of these are just some teams. Buffalo's going to call, I'm sure. Now, nobody wants to probably play there based on what the team is at right now. But you're going to see a lot of teams looking to get in on this guy and see what it'll take. For sure, I bet you at least 20 teams will call on him. And then I bet you the negotiations get down to 5-6 teams who are serious bidders for this guy.
If there's that much of... So you're saying, I mean, to paraphrase what you've just said, is that there's going to be significant demand.
Yeah.
Even with that significant demand, you don't think he matches what... you look at what... You know, look at his point totals versus a guy like David Clarkson's point totals last year.
Clarkson's making low fives, true.
I know he's making low fives, but you're talking about a shorter term. I mean, he might ask for 7 years, but... I'm sure he will. Yeah. Would you give him... At what year amount? How many years would you feel comfortable giving him if he matched the $6.6 million per year again?
Four. And I wouldn't feel that comfortable with it, but four.
So if he said bidding starts at 4 years and $6.6, you would consider it? On a four-year deal?
I would consider it, yeah. I think a team would jump at that. One team would jump at that. Remember, they're all competing with each other. The NHL is not exactly a disciplined market. Not like they're waiting out guys, kind of like baseball.
You mentioned, though, that foot speed is not his strength. Uh-huh. Is that possibly an asset when he comes to his negotiation saying, look, you know, my game isn't built on speed, so I'm not going to lose. You know, I'm not going to get that much slower, or and it's not going to affect what I do
mean,
best.
He's only 28, though, Drew, so I mean, he shouldn't be having seeing a significant drop-off from 28 through 32, 33 years. And at the end of the day, he can max out a seven-year deal, which takes him to 35. So that he's primed to kill this market.
What about his, you know, his durability? Any concerns regarding his durability?
You know, not really, Drew. You look at his output. He's had seasons where he hasn't played a ton, but not really. There's only really been one. I mean, you look at it, he played... There's a couple of seasons where...
2008, 2009.
Yeah, but I mean, since then, 81 games, 74, 79, 40 last year in a 48-game season.
It's pretty dependable
this
player.
That's pretty good. And you know what? He's not the most physical guy, although he's... You know, he can play off of contact. You know, he's got... He's shifty that way. Like, he knows what... He's a smart player. Let me put it that way. He knows how to use his body to create space.
What kind of wingers would he be best suited to play
Anybody.
With?
He's a good passer. He sees the ice. He'll be good with anybody you put him with. You want to put, you know, it's true. I mean, you put him with a guy off the cycle, he can find him. You put him off the guy off the rush, you can find him. He's going to be, that's why he's going to be marketable, because he can play with just about anybody. It's an easy fit.
And you look at how he's doing right now on the second line of the Colorado Avalanche, playing with Landeskog, and they move those lines around a lot because they've got O'Reilly playing on the wings, and they've actually had MacKinnon playing on the wings because they've got a lot of too many good centers. The Colorado Avalanche, the only thing that they've done wrong this year, because they've gone from last place in the league to being a team that has a chance really to, not a necessarily good chance, but they're in there and have a chance to really get home ice in the first round of the playoffs. But they're going to me, it's Scott Gomez all over again with the New Jersey Devils. Not saying that they're the exact same player. I'm just saying that they're going to lose him for nothing. And really... Sure, they might have an embarrassment of riches there and up the middle. Still, you don't want to lose a player, and it's unfortunate that Joe Sakic, Greg Sherman weren't able to get something for Paul Stastny. But really, as Richie mentioned, the demand is going to be so high for this guy because of what he is able to do, quite frankly. And you look at it, and he will get a contract. He'll be one. He'll guarantee you. I like to do guarantees, as you know. He'll go July 1st. He'll go right off the top because a team will show him the money.
And the thing with them is, I assume Joe Sakic comes into the year and says, "I'm going to trade Stastny at the deadline," because I don't think we're going to be obviously as good as they ended up being. And so he thought it'd be a nice way to turn into something. But now you can't do that when you're competing for the number two seed in Central Division, and you're looking at making a big run, regardless of your lack of, you know, competent defensemen. You can't do that to the team in the locker room for a second round or a first round pick if they would have got one, because the guys in the locker room, what are you talking about? We could go for a run. We have some of the highest regulation overtime wins in the league, and you're going to sell a guy for a draft pick that we won't see? You can't do it.
And Richie, we should mention for those that are listening, saying, well, what about the chances of the Colorado Avalanche re-signing him? I think you probably agree, Richie, that it's probably so slim because of the fact, we haven't even really brought this up, but it's out there. Ryan O'Reilly needs to be signed again, too.
Yeah, and what's he starting at, Rick? His qualifying offers, that's the reason that he signed that deal. His qualifying offers way higher.
Right, thanks to Jay Feaster in Calgary, who signed him as a restricted free agent when he was holding out. Anyways, that's Paul Stastny. He's an unrestricted free agent come July 1st. Each and every show, we're going to go through the list and give you a preview for all those, making sure that you're ready for when unrestricted free agency hits. You're listening to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290. When we come back, we'll shift our focus back to the Jets and the Sharks. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
20 minutes past 7 in the evening. Welcome back to NHL Midweek here on TSN 1290, online at TSN1290.ca. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Gentlemen, tomorrow night, 9:30, puck drop at the HP Pavilion. Is that what it's still called?
That was the...
It's the SAP Center or something like that.
That's right.
It'll always be the HP Pavilion to me. The Jets and the Sharks.
It's a Shark Tank.
That too. Jets and the Sharks in San Jose, of course, tomorrow evening.
Don't you have a shark at home? A little baby shark?
No, that's a dog. No. It's Brixton the dog. It's an honest mistake, though.
It's a cute dog.
Favorite movie is Sharknado,
I like Brix.
Though.
Brix is a good dog.
Yeah, Brix is a good dog. Yep. I agree with you. I'm glad you said that, because I'll tell you what, you're in trouble with my wife, and we can talk about that later on in the show. You know why.
I don't.
You're mocking Kentucky basketball.
I went to your wedding in Kentucky. I like Kentucky. I was just stirring the pot. That's what I do.
She doesn't stand idly by for that. Let me tell you.
Can you blame me for not cheering for a team named the Shockers?
Not gonna touch that. We want to talk about Remus's Kentucky Fried Chicken experience. Wichita State.
They lost anyways. It worked out.
Yeah, it worked out. But you're lucky it worked out. Otherwise, she was gonna come after you.
I apologize.
Anyways, the Jets and the Sharks. They meet for the second time this year in San Jose. Obviously, the Jets lost by a 1-0 margin early on, at sort of towards the end of January, the 23rd of January to be precise. Lots has changed since then for the Winnipeg Jets. They're no longer on that significant hot streak they were on when Paul Maurice was hired. Not much has changed for the San Jose Sharks. They're still right up at the top of the NHL standings, one of the best teams in the NHL.
Well, and the annual March, San Jose, the best team in the NHL. Can they do it in the playoffs?
And?
I mean, I picked San Jose and Boston to make the finals. I don't like to veer off of that.
You can't change. No, we made a rule. We made a rule. You can't change your picks.
And I appreciate that, but the best team, I think, in the West is Chicago. I think St. Louis thinks they're better. I think Chicago's still better than St. Louis. We'll see now, based on the division formats, who that best team is in the Central. But you look at the Pacific, and San Jose has a ton of pieces, but they always do. And the question to me always comes down to, and it seems like Doug Wilson is willing to take this risk, and we've talked about it in this show a number of times, the risk about the defense.
Yep.
And he's going in there. He's got, you know, Vlasic right now, who obviously played very well in the Olympics, and he's a very good player, but he's more of a shutdown, you know, positionally strong, first pass kind of guy on the back end, complimented the players he played with in the Olympics, especially well, being Drew Doughty. But you look at the other guys, you know, Brad Stewart, good mobile defender, but he's a little up there in age now. Danny Boyle, maybe not the defenseman he once was. Scott Hannon, not the defenseman he once was. And then you got Justin Braun and Jason Demers.
I don't know if you mentioned Brad Stewart, but I still think he's excellent.
I did mention Brad Stewart. But he's good, I was tweeting. Yeah, he's okay.
We know.
He's good as but you know, Demers and Braun can move, and Demers has got really good offensive skills, sometimes at the expense of defense. But yeah, look at that defense and you say, do their forwards, and this is a bigger level before we break down tomorrow's game, are their forwards better than Chicago and St. Louis to an extent that it makes up for the fact that their defenses are just not as good? And we're talking about Chicago, St. Louis. I mean, let's be honest here. They got to get through Anaheim or LA, who are going to play in the first round. And now it's certainly a benefit to be first in that division if they do finish first, because playing LA or Anaheim, it's a lot harder. Playing LA, in reality, because it's LA, it's either Anaheim or them for the first spot. It's going to be them. You know,
well, it's not necessarily going to be them. They're 4 points up on Anaheim, but Anaheim's got 3 games in hand.
Yeah, okay, fair. I just think it'll be them.
Okay.
But, I mean, they're more of a machine. Anaheim's a little bit up and down, obviously, this year, but lately, excuse me. But you look at it, they're going to be able to play one of those teams, unless they finish second, in the second round, and not have to deal with the beating that you're going to get from playing those teams in a seven game series. But again, their defense is not as good as LA's. It's not as good, in my opinion at least. It's not as good as St. Louis. It's not as good as Chicago. So are their forwards and goaltending going to make up for that discrepancy? And I don't think it does. I mean, Crawford has won the cup now. Crawford and Miller. I mean, is Niemi any better than any of those guys?
I would put Niemi over Crawford at this point. Still.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, and he's got his cup too with Chicago. But is he that much better, really?
No, not significantly enough to make up for the gap between the Sharks defense and the Kings and the Blackhawks defense.
And then the question is it, you know, at least again, the way I'm looking at it here is are there forwards? And they're very dynamic at forward.
Yes.
But are their forwards better, that much better than St. Louis, Chicago, or LA, or Anaheim too? We should include Anaheim.
Right, but see, now you're going against your pick. Stick with your pick. I do think
it would be great to have the storyline of Thornton against Boston for the fun. I think Boston would win that.
I thought you were going to say the storyline of Richard being correct.
No, that'd be great too, Richie.
I think, and again, it's not always just. And again, I know that's how analysis works. You have to take, you know, the match it up and everything. I think when you're talking about overall depth, and we did that, I think it was about a month ago, we compared Chicago and St. Louis, and I picked a tie, if you remember that, and I got some flack from one of our good friends. So I do think Chicago and St. Louis, even though San Jose...
Huss didn't like the tie pick either.
I think that Chicago and St. Louis on paper are pretty much equal at this point. Mm. I think St. Louis is the only team that competes with Chicago on the depth on defense.
Yes, I agree with that. I think Chicago is the better team.
Chicago has the better forwards, and I think that Ryan Miller kind of, you could give the edge there. But what I'm saying is the team that scares me the most, and we've said this, we've been doing the show for 5 years, are the San Jose Sharks due? We might ask David Pollock that question.
What does that
mean? Well, I'm just saying, is this the year? And again, if it isn't this year, that they don't have many years, because the core of this group, Patty Marleau and Joe Thornton, both signed 3-year deals. When those guys, those contracts are up, I mean, what I'm saying is the window for the Sharks to win is now. They're going for it now. They want the Stanley Cup. They're not playing.
Joe Thornton is Peyton Manning without the ring.
Sorry?
Joe Thornton is Peyton Manning without the Super Bowl ring.
Right, but you know what I'm
it's
saying.
A good analogy,
this,
you know.
This team, they don't want to get to the second round.
Well, I know.
They don't want to get to the third round. They want to win the cup. This is a team that for years and years and years gets the second round and then out. And so what I'm saying.
They've blown chances. I mean, they played in the conference finals. Was it Calgary or Edmonton they lost to in the conference finals?
Calgary.
Calgary. They're better than Calgary.
Right.
They lost the conference finals in against Vancouver.
Yep.
And, I mean, come on, guys. They didn't really show up there.
To me, even though.
I know there were close games, but like you got to win the games.
When
you lost to Calgary, I mean, Cinderella story, Kiprusov, your old goalie, blah, blah, blah. And we're talking 10 years ago now. You still lost.
Right. And that's why I think that this year, to me, I'm just saying that to me, even though Chicago and St. Louis, I'm not picking the Sharks to win the Cup. I'm just saying they do scare me. Because this year, they're playing some of the best hockey I've ever seen in the regular season. And yeah, sure, St. Louis is leading the conference right now, but they scare me. That's all I'm saying. The one team that scares me, and I pick Chicago, it's not St. Louis. It is San Jose.
I think L.A. beats Anaheim, and I think L.A., who we know San Jose has trouble with L.A. I think that's a tough one for them.
That's the hurdle right there. You got to beat the Kings before you
Thomas hurdle?
You got to beat the Kings, Richie, before you get to the Hawks, right? Before you get the chance to go to the conference finals, you got to beat a pretty good team before there.
I think you mentioned the defense, and it's certainly a significant issue. When you look at the Sharks' defense, and all year long, I believe they've used seven defensemen all year long.
Yep.
They've only had seven defensemen play a regular season game for them. That's a very small number. And we're saying they don't have a great defense as is. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine?
Well, they have a pretty. I mean, if you're talking about
it's not great, it's good.
You're talking their defense. Dan Boyle, Mark Edward Vlasic, Demers is underrated. Hannon and Stewart, veteran guys that might not be at their peak, but I'd still say that's a top 10 defense in the NHL.
I mean,
of the wrong answer, Remus?
No, I mean, it might be. I don't think it's top 10 as yet, off the top of my head. You know, you look at Chicago, you look at St. Louis, you look at the Rangers. There's a couple of teams, you know, you could talk L.A., I think, is better. You could argue Anaheim based on, they have a lot of depth, Anaheim. They've got a lot of guys who can play. I mean, I'm just thinking Boston, if they have Seidenberg. So there are certain teams that I think carry the edge over this team. But I think they're a good defense. But can you win? Like, when your big guys aren't always stepping up, can you win that way? And when the big guys don't step up, what happens is this. You don't score enough, and then the defense has to prevent more goals.
I know that this isn't completely a reflection of how good the defense is, but what are the Sharks' ranked goals against here?
Goals against? Hang on one moment.
That doesn't matter.
Well, it matters something.
It matters something, but it doesn't matter. It's not conclusive.
Okay, are they top 10? Just
hang on. Sorry.
Richie's going to kill me here.
That's okay. Wouldn't be the first time.
St. Louis is the second most goals in the league, right?
San Jose has given up the fourth least amount of goals in the NHL.
And what's St. Louis for goals scored?
St. Louis for goals scored?
Yeah.
St. Louis has scored second most goals in the NHL.
Okay, so you're not. Well, are you
I'm
guys?
Saying,
so that means you guys aren't concerned about St. Louis scoring and San Jose defending?
No. I'm just saying that goals against the fourth in the league. So they're a pretty good defensive team. I'm just saying
they're a pretty good defensive.
This is the problem. Is when you're playing like tomorrow night when you're playing against the Jets, and the second line is Bufflin, Wheeler, and whoever, Jokinen, for example. And in the playoffs, when you're playing a playoff team.
No, you're right.
And the second line has Patrick Kane and Hossa or Sharp, whatever they want to mix up their lines. That is the difference.
Yeah.
When the second line has Jeff Carter and other guys.
Do I know how to get Richie going or what?
You are pretty good at it.
You know, even St. Louis, Jaden Schwartz, Berglund, those guys.
Love
Tarasenko. You're talking different ball game on a night in, night out basis, and never mind the third pairing, because all these good teams have third lines too.
Could you drop the puck for the playoffs right now?
I'm ready to roll for the playoffs.
Never mind if anybody gets injured, which was what my point was. They've only used seven defensemen; they haven't had to go really deep into their system.
That's a good point there.
Thank you. It's rare that I make a good one.
I know. I'm surprised too.
Why don't we go to break? We're going to bring David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News on.
It's my uncle.
It's your uncle. or. You're just going to be the sound effects of Ridger choking Ezzy out for the next 15 minutes. Either way, you're listening to NHL Midweek for live on TSN 1290.
listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
7:30 in the evening here on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Programming notes, next Wednesday we are preempted here on the station so that we can bring you Toronto Blue Jays baseball. Again, next Wednesday we are preempted. We will be back the Wednesday after that for the final two episodes of NHL Midweek during this 2013-14 NHL season. Of course, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show will continue all summer long. We never take a week off from that. This Saturday, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, 3 p.m. Note the start time. Jets are in Los Angeles, so we're on 3 p.m. until 6 p.m. this coming Saturday here on TSN 1290.
The NHL Midweek Hockey Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome back to NHL Midweek our good friend from the San Jose Mercury News, David Pollock. David, good evening. Thanks very much for joining us.
Good evening. Thanks for the invitation.
Always our pleasure, David. Dave, I mean, we're sort of into the last 10 or so games of the NHL season, and the San Jose Sharks are in their usual spot, up at the top of the Western Conference, one of the best teams in the league. Is this San Jose Sharks team any different than the previous teams that have had very good regular seasons but haven't been able to get quite over that hump and make it, either win the Stanley Cup or get to the Stanley Cup final?
Yeah, there's your $64,000 question. We get a lot down here. We've heard it a lot for about the last decade, I think, that there's still that expectation that hasn't been met. There's reasons to think this might be a different Sharks team, but again, you got to watch and see where it goes from here. This is probably a better Sharks team than the last couple seasons. If you recall, they didn't really get a playoff spot clinched until the last two or three games, which isn't bad. But this time they clinched early, and they're taking a serious run at the top of the Pacific, because even though they won't say it, nobody wants to play Los Angeles in the first round.
Yeah, exactly, David. Now, Sharks obviously having trouble with that team in the past. When we were previewing, tomorrow's game, we really wanted to break down, the matchups and such. It ended up being the conversation about the Sharks, as Drew just asked you. We kind of focus on their defense, and it's a pretty good defense. I wouldn't say it's a great defense, though. Is this defense good enough, David, for this team to beat, say, L.A., or the wild card team, if they finish first, then L.A., and then Chicago or St. Louis, and then Boston or Pittsburgh?
It's a reasonable question to ask. I think a lot of people don't appreciate a guy like Justin Braun, who has become a really steady presence back on the blue line. A lot of times with Mark Edward Vlasic, he's not the same player as Vlasic, but he's in kind of the same situation that nobody really recognizes that he's doing some good things out there. Vlasic, I think, is finally getting recognized, and I think that helps. Part of it's going to be last year in the playoffs, the Sharks actually had a pretty good run with Brad Stewart and Scott Hammond. Those guys are both veterans, but they're also getting a little bit older, and so the question is, can they bring it again this year? They did last year for sure, and that's one of the questions you have to look at there.
David, if the playoffs started today, right now, as Richie mentioned, San Jose Sharks are in second behind the St. Louis Blues. They'd match up against the Minnesota Wild. Do they want to play the Wild? Is there a team that scares them right now, or do they even care who they play in the first round? Because as you mentioned, it's probably a team like L.A. that they fear in the second round.
Yeah, I mean, the Sharks, you run the questions by them, and they just say, we want to finish higher than anybody so we get home ice advantage. And they won't get into the specifics, and they're not going to say, we want to play Minnesota instead of L.A. But, they probably want to play Minnesota instead of L.A. And the theory, of course, is that if it ends up being L.A. and Anaheim in the first round, if the Sharks finish first, those teams are just going to beat each other up badly, or whoever the Kings play. And the Sharks are going to be in a much better position this day they face the winner of that series in the next round, so those guys are going to be pretty bruised. And the Sharks, rightfully so, don't want to be the bruised guys. They want to be the other guys.
You look behind the bench, David, and Tom McClellan. Is there something where, he's come in and we keep talking about, the same thing happening, and there's been different coaches behind the bench, whether it be Daryl Sutter or more so, Ron Wilson, and then you got McClellan. Has he changed at all, or is there a different approach that he's going to be taking to try and get something out of this team that they haven't been able to do before?
I'm not sure it's going to be anything different. I think if you look at last, it's actually been two seasons now who he's surrounded with. He's got Larry Robinson back there.
Uh-huh.
He's got Jim Johnson back there, two sort of veteran NHL. Larry Robinson, obvious Hall of Famer. But Jim Johnson, not a bad hockey player either in his day. And I just think that adds to the whole presence that makes McClellan a better coach too, because he's got guys he can rely on who've got that kind of background.
I don't think he's changed anything fundamental. You're listening to NHL Midweek on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca. We're talking to David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News about the San Jose Sharks. David, you look at the Sharks' injury situation. First of all, I wanted to start with, as it relates to tomorrow's game against the Jets, Logan Couture is supposedly questionable. Do you know if he's going to play tomorrow or not?
No, we don't know yet. The team has a day off today, so there are really no updates. But I did have a talk with Doug Wilson a few minutes ago, and he basically said Couture is day-to-day.
Okay.
He took a really hard puck on the skate, and I'm not sure whether it's his foot or his ankle that's the problem. But they keep telling us that it's not serious, so I'm guessing that when they did the evaluation, there was no fracture, and what we're dealing with is kind of a serious bruise or something along those lines.
Obviously, the Sharks are trying to get everybody as healthy as possible leading up for the playoffs. They're, you know, securely into the Stanley Cup playoffs. You look at their injury list. It's not extensive, mm-hmm. but it does have a couple significant players on it. Thomas Hertl has been out since December with a right knee surgery. Rafi Torres has been out since early March. Body soreness is what it's described as, which is a new one. I'm not sure if that's upper body or lower body. And then yesterday, Adam Burrish, his finger looks like it explodes on TV. That was it just goes to show you what these guys who block pucks in the NHL go through on a daily basis. You know, Hertl and Torres are sort of, can you talk about their updates and their injury cases for the upcoming playoffs?
Sure. I think Rafi Torres is going to be ready. I think what the Sharks are doing, they brought him back for 5 or 6 games. They call it general soreness, and I'm sure that there's areas other than his knee that are, that were sore at the time. But I think there's still an issue with the knee, and they want to make sure that he's not in a situation where he comes back for 5 games and has to miss 5 games. I think they're basically giving him the rest now, so they're not in the situation they're in now once the playoffs begin. Thomas Hertl is a tougher one to come up with an answer to. The Sharks still have not set a timeline on his return, whether it might be, I don't think it's going to be in the regular season. I think that's pretty safe. Whether it's a first round playoff, second if the Sharks are there, or beyond, is pretty much what we'd just be guessing. But I don't think it's out of the question, but I don't think you can fit him out for anything more than that.
David, they popped a couple of power play goals yesterday, but for the most part, the Sharks' power play struggled this year. If you look at their talent level and 19th overall in the National Hockey League, what needs to get better on that front?
Pretty much everything. Although when we talked to Todd last night, he said, they 3-1 in this time, but we've had games like that before where they just weren't going in. So he was kind of minimizing any kind of significant style issue there that's changed. I think one of the real questions that you have to ask, though, is Dan Boyle's role, because Dan has been the quarterback on that for a long time. And Dan is, I hate to say this out loud, because Dan's a great hockey, good hockey player and a good person. But there's still something, I don't think his game is 100% mm-hmm. where he would like it to be at this point.
David, when you talk about the San Jose Sharks and if they're able to take that next step and get to the Stanley Cup Finals and even win their first ever Stanley Cup, Richie mentioned earlier, asked you about the defense, but when you look at maybe certain players and their ability to elevate their games, who is the player where you say this guy has to really elevate his game? Because we know a guy like Joe Pavelski was very good last year in the playoffs, but mm-hmm. to you, who is the key guy where you say, if that guy really turns up his game, this guy can really help this team get to the Stanley Cup Finals, get to the promised land?
I think, if you look at their big-name guys like Thornton or Marlowe or Pavelski or Couture, I think they have elevated the game this season. I don't think that everybody's been watching them and going to say, hey, they've got to get better. I think where it gets really interesting is around the third line, and it's, the game plan called for Pavelski to be the third line center. That hadn't worked out since Hertl got injured. And they've come up with a line lately that's actually found some success. And it's got James Shepard at center with Tommy Wingles and Marty Havlat. Wingles is giving it his all every night. Shepard's a guy who's been in and out of the doghouse here, but right now is playing the best hockey he has since he got to San Jose. And if he can keep that up, that's going to make it a lot easier to keep Pavelski on the top line. Marty Havlat is sort of the question mark, is both his health and sort of his drive out there. And right now he's playing good hockey too. So if those three guys can all come through and enable McClellan to keep his top two lines as they are, I think that's going to be really significant.
David, we'll let you go on this last question. We asked about the power play and mentioned that it's been struggling. On the flip side, you have the penalty kill, top five in the league at 85.1% success rate in killing off man advantage chances. Has there been one thing in particular that's been the key to the penalty kill success?
No, I think they just sort of get a little more aggressive than maybe they used to. And the problem is guys who get aggressive, like Adam Burrish last night, end up blocking a lot of pucks. And that's been a mixed blessing the last couple nights at least. I think Couture is going to be back fairly soon. Adam Burrish, it might be a while.
David, I lied. We have one more question for you. We look back at the NHL trade deadline, which was about 3 weeks ago. Like the Winnipeg Jets, the San Jose Sharks were one team that did absolutely nothing at the deadline, didn't make any deals, didn't acquire anybody. You know, are you surprised that they decided to stand pat with the lineup, even though they've been very successful, of course? Are you surprised they didn't do anything to bolster some depth or add another defenseman at the NHL trade deadline?
I thought they might have done something on the small side, but I wasn't surprised when they did nothing, because I think the way Doug Wilson explains it, and I assume it's the way he looks at it, he felt he was getting Couture back, he was getting Torres back right around after the break, he was getting Matt Nieto had a health issue right before the Olympic break, and he was coming back healthy. I think he sort of felt we're going to finally see what this team is going to look like that I put together last summer, and rather than tinker with it, since those guys hadn't been all together this year, he's going to ride with the crew he has.
David Pollock covers the San Jose Sharks for the San Jose Mercury News. David, thanks very much for joining us this evening on NHL Midweek with the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Thanks for the invitation.
Always, David. Thanks very much. Let's head to break. You're listening to TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to David Pollock for joining us to discuss the San Jose Sharks ahead of tomorrow evening's Jets-Sharks game.
Save the questions and we'll ask them next year.
God willing. You know, I mean, like, it's such a cynic.
Well, no, but hey, I mean,
you can't go. You picked them.
I know, but I still ask the same questions.
You got to stick with them, Richie.
I don't know why Dougie Wilson didn't add a defenseman.
Well, David Pollock was surprised.
Could have added himself, former defenseman.
Yeah, you know, from Winnipeg.
Is he from Winnipeg?
Well, he's from Ottawa, I believe, but he played in Winnipeg.
He played in Winnipeg.
His teen years.
Yeah, he did.
Really? Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, he played out of St. James, I think.
Right after us here on TSN 1290, a replay of the McPhillips Toyota Coaches Summit, of course. Yep. So be sure to keep your radio on here in case you missed any of that fantastic interview.
Yep. You guys think he'll be back?
Maurice?
Yeah.
My hunch was no, but then I listened to the Coaches Summit, and I mean, he said things that make you think he's coming back, and I don't know. I'm wavering on that one. I really am. This segment of the show is brought to you by CompuStitch Embroidery Design, serving Winnipeg and surrounding areas for over 15 years. No matter the size of the job, small or large, CompuStitch Embroidery Design provides expert attention to customers' needs. CompuStitch Embroidery Design, keeping you in stitches since 1996. The official sponsor of the Illegal Curve game-winning goal and Illegal Curve 50-50 contests.
Six things we learned this week.
Commence countdown. Six.
Richard Pollock starts us off this week. Richie, the Edmonton Oilers need to add size up front this offseason. Never mind their poor defense and goaltending, which is also suspect.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, Scrivens comes in, sure. You know,
their ability to pitchfork a jersey is fabulous.
Yeah, though. And they got fast, and I know their save percentage is better and all that jazz since they acquired those goalies, which wasn't necessarily difficult, considering the guy they went in with, Devan Dubnyk, is not even in the National Hockey League right now.
Yeah, Devan Sivnik.
It's on his third organization through the year. They have needs on defense. I think that's obvious. You can talk about their goaltending or lack of high-end goaltender. But at the end of the day, guys, another need that they have is size up front. They cannot defend in the defensive zone. They're too small. These big teams just lean on them. And if you're going to play in the Western Conference, even in the Eastern Conference, I know the West is bigger probably for the most part, but you have to be able to have some size, especially up the middle. I mean, right now they're rolling up guys like Sam Gagne, you know, over the course of the year, Sam Gagne, Nugent Hopkins, Gordon, you put them all together, they don't equal like Anze Kopitar in terms of size. You know, they stand on top of each other. You can't defend. You can't have that many small guys. And there's so many holes in that team. How do you fix it? How do you fix it? You don't fix it in the summer anymore. Unless Craig McTavish is a genius if he's able to do that. There's a lot of work to do there.
I think there's at least probably a good couple shows can be spent discussing how to fix the Edmonton Oilers.
Five.
Ezzie Ginsberg, Ilya Bryzgalov has turned out to be a savvy trade deadline acquisition for general manager Chuck Fletcher and the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, he really is. And when Ilya Bryzgalov was acquired by the Minnesota Wild, I didn't think I'd ever be picking this for three things I learned this week. But you look at what Ilya Bryzgalov's done, and he had a win against the Detroit Red Wings on the road, a big win for the Minnesota Wild. Since he's come over, these are his numbers, and the numbers don't lie. He's won two games. He hasn't lost a game. 2-0-2, 9.13 save percentage, a shutout, 2.1 goals against average. Now, he was acquired for a fourth-round draft pick.
He's no good.
Well, you look at. Yeah. Thank you for going everything against my point. Ilya Bryzgalov, let's not forget where he was at the beginning of this year. He was playing hockey in Las Vegas. I think he was probably spending most of his time at the slot machine. But because Darcy Kemper is basically at this point someone who has no playoff experience, Josh Harding, it doesn't look like he's going to be back. So to have him, to have that option, I'm not saying that he's the best goaltender of all time. I'm just saying that the acquisition has provided a nice safety net for Darcy Kemper going into the playoffs, and he's played really well. His numbers with the Edmonton Oilers are night and day. And sure, the defense is a lot better in the Minnesota Wild. We can't forget that. But
put you behind Ryan Suter, you'll have a good safety
percentage. For a fourth-round draft pick, considering that they didn't have a lot of options in the system, I think it's a good move.
Yeah, he still sucks, though. Four.
Got to get Richie more fired up before these shows. This has been great. Richie, the Montreal Canadiens are quietly becoming a team that could make a run in the postseason based on their mix of high-end talent, puck-moving defensemen, and great goaltending.
Yeah, you know what? I think they could have even used one more puck-moving defenseman on the back end. We talked about that coming into the end. Pat Hickey didn't think so, and he covers the team a lot more closely than we do. So I don't know. But you look at that division, and they're going to basically play Tampa Bay right now. They're essentially locked in. And right now, they have Tampa has two games in hand on them, and they have the tiebreaker. So if Tampa wins two of those games in regulation and overtime, then they're going to be 2 points ahead, and they're going to be equal in regulation and overtime wins. But they're locked in to play Tampa. I think they're better than Tampa, guys, giving you a little preview into our playoff preview show. I think they're better than Tampa. They play the Bruins really tough. And I look at the Eastern Conference, and I could see them winning against any team they play against. Like, I could certainly see them losing as well. They have a nice balance, and they got Carey Price between the pipes. My biggest concern about the team is the coaching. Will Therrien keep his composure come playoff time? Three.
Ezzie Ginsberg, for the Columbus Blue Jackets to have a serious chance of winning its first ever playoff round, Nathan Horton will have to be a major offensive contributor.
Okay, of course, that's assuming. And I know there. Richard's already looking at me and he's saying, thank you, Captain Obvious. Nathan Horton has not scored a goal in 23 games. I don't know if you guys know that.
How many goals do you have for the year?
Not many. He's only played 40 games. Nathan Horton was given a 7-year contract by the Columbus Blue Jackets. They knew that he was going to miss the first 40 games of the year. Yeah. He's missed the first 3 months of the year. But you look at the Blue Jackets, and I've picked the Blue Jackets a lot in this segment because I like a lot of the players, and a lot of players on this team are having career years. Ryan Johansson, young, good player, centering the first line. Cam Atkinson, I really like Boone Jenner. But if Columbus Blue Jackets...
He's got four goals this year.
If the Columbus Blue Jackets, Richie, have... And this, they've never won a playoff round. They've never won a playoff game. They've only been in the playoffs once. If they want to have any chance against a team like the Boston Bruins or the Pittsburgh Penguins, and Nathan Horton last year had 19 points in the playoffs. He was excellent. We all know that.
Yep.
But he's been awful as of late. He has 1 point in his last 7 games. And Ryan Johansson's a good player, and they have a lot of good players, but Nathan Horton's a guy.
Well, he's money in the playoffs.
He is money. But I'm saying, going into the playoffs, he's not doing too well. So for me, that's the key guy for me, because I know that, again, Ryan Johansson, third year in the league, he's having a great year, and Boone Jenner, young guy, all this. But Nathan Horton's the veteran guy that they acquired for this exact reason. You get into the playoffs, he's the guy they're going to lean on, the veteran guy. Two.
He gets over $1 million for gold this year. That's a good deal.
still more value than David Clarkson.
Oh, God.
Winning the division, Richard Pollock, winning the division under the new format has rightfully given top teams an advantage in the standings, which wasn't the case for the past few seasons.
Well, you know, you've locked in these 2-3 teams, Drew, into the, you know, if you had, for example, some of these top, because of the 1-2-3 system they used to have before, a lot of the times if you won the division and you were the second seed, you might, because there was division, there was, there wasn't, there was too much depth in one division, you'd end up drawing a pretty tough draw this that time around. Now, sure, if you're a second division winner, you're playing the other wild card. The wild cards have proven for the most part to not be as threatening as those other teams. So there's less of a you're more rewarded for regular season performance, which I like.
Yep.
You have to be able to give, if you're not going to give more points for regulation wins and all that jazz, and I at least like this system. This system has grown on me throughout the course of the year,
yeah,
and I hope it continues, because even with the divisional imbalance, you know, 16 teams in one conference, 14 in the other, Major League Baseball did that for a while, and I'm in favor of it. The NHL has done this one right. One.
Apocalypse must be upon us, Richard, praising the NHL. So, as you wrap it up, San Jose Sharks forward Joe Pavelski deserves serious consideration for the Hart Trophy.
What?
The reason why I brought this up...
Richard disagrees.
The reason, he's second in the league in goals. The reason why I brought this up, last Saturday we talked about who the MVP should be. I picked Crosby, Getzlaff, and Suter. Pavelski had a hat trick last night. He's got 3 hat tricks this year. This guy is doing everything for this team. As I mentioned, 37 goals, second in the league. Nobody's catching Ovechkin. This guy's at a 56% faceoff percentage. This guy's, you look at the team, he's doing everything for this team, having a career year this year. I think he deserves serious consideration. I'm not saying he's going to end up getting one of those top 3 selections, but I'm saying the year that he's having is unbelievable, and I think he is the most valuable player on the Sharks.
I like Joe Pavelski, but playing with Joe Thornton certainly helps power play wise, all that stuff. I like him. Great player. Good goal scorer. He's been a. Ain't no MVP, though, is he? Ahead of Sagan?
You guys can talk about.
I said serious consideration.
You guys can talk about him more on Saturday. It was a jam packed show here on NHL Midweek. We didn't even get to Remus's photo shoot or mremus.ca,
of course.
We'll have to do that on Saturday. Big thanks to our guests, Michael Trakos of the National Post and David Pollock of the San Jose Mercury News. Big thanks to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, CompuStitch Embroidery Design, and Bernstein's Deli. In case you missed any of the show, it will be available for download on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, IllegalCurve.com. Follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. For producer Michael Remus, for Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mindell. We remind you, Saturday afternoon, 3 p.m. start time for the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Stay tuned for a replay of the McPhillips Toyota Coaches Summit.
You've been listening to Hostler and Lawless, the podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch Hostler and Lawless live weekdays at 4 on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca.